Hi, this is Aspen Grinder with the Religion in Kansas Project. I'm joined by Rosemary Williams. Thank you for joining me. So I'll read this quick statement and then we'll get going. The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the history of various churches and other religious organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take approximately 1 hour, usually from about 30 minutes to an hour. We assure you that you are not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement at any time. If you have to run to catch the movie.
Right.
Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interested in interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through our website and to be identified by name as the person who was interviewed. Should you have any questions about the project, please contact Professor Tim Miller, and I can give you his contact information if you want. And if you have any questions about your right as a research participant, you may call the Human Subject Protection Office, and I can get you that as well.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'd just like to start things off with basically a bit about yourself, just where you're from originally.
Well, kind of bounced around a bit when I was a kid. So up until about fifth grade, I'd lived in Milwaukee, Chicago, Las Vegas, Bullhead City, Arizona, before my mom moved me back to her hometown to raise me and my brother, where she grew up. Worked out well for my brother, a little less so for me. So I wound up spending the latter half of my childhood in a tiny town in northeast Missouri. And I guess your focus is kind of like religious background. And,
yeah, yes.
Okay. So my mom kind of made a half-hearted attempt to raise me Methodist. And in the early childhood, it was, you know, never actually going to church. It was, hey, friends of the family are going to this weekend day camp thing. Let's take Rosemary along with her and she can learn some things. And I didn't quite get what was going on at that point, so my little 8-year-old self was just annoyed by the whole process, because we were going around through all these little stations with all these craft projects that we never had enough time to finish, and it was all of these different disjointed stories, and I had this vague conception that it was all supposed to be in one book, but there didn't seem to be any cohesiveness going on. So I kept on wondering, well, when does Moses meet this guy with the crazy colored dream coat, and what's going on here, and where's the narrative? Even as an 8-year-old, I was just like, where's the overarching plot line? So it took me a while before I finally understood what was actually going on. Like, oh, this is like a history that spans thousands of years, and people believe all this stuff actually happened, and okay, no one ever actually explained that part to me when I was a kid. So once we hit high school, I was involved in the local Methodist church. I was playing music a lot of different Sundays, and I never quite fit. I tried real hard when I was in high school. By the time I hit college, I just sort of drifted off into agnosticism, because it just, none of it quite felt right. Well, as it happened, I spent a few years of my college at a Methodist college. There was a required religion course.
Was this
college
in Missouri?
Yes, it was on the Missouri side. I've only lived on the Kansas side for a little over a year. But when we were there, I had to take a required religion course, which covered, you know, all the basics of world religion. And there was one day that they spent on the various pagan religions, and I'm looking through this stuff, and I'm like, oh, the little switch flipped in my head. I'm like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. And the teacher of that class was a Methodist minister, and he realized what he'd done. The poor man was just horrified. But what's done is done. So I kind of went into eclectic Wicca for a while. Sort of floated around as a very lazy pagan.
Was there a pretty active community where you were at the time?
No. I wound up having to move back up to my mom's for a while, because we had some major family things going on. So I wound up getting stuck up there for a while, eventually getting my education degree, but in the meantime I was just this one sole island of nerdy pagan in this crazy conservative county. So after I got my education degree, I got the heck out of there, moved to Kansas City, and that's when I found Gaia Community. I'm like, oh, a bunch of pagans under the Unitarian Universalist umbrella. That sounds intriguing. And at the time, Gaia was meeting in Smooch, which is Shawnee Mission UU, so we were renting space out of them. So Gaia communities kind of bounced back and forth across the state line. Mm. And really, the Kansas City Metro is just sort of its own thing. Mm. It kind of blends Kansas and Missouri into
one. You never quite know where you are
in terms of kaleidoscope of madness. But so I went to Gaia. One of the very first rituals I was there, I wound up getting claimed by an ancient Egyptian deity, and from there I started my transition from Wicca into being a Kemetic practitioner, which is what I am now.
And what year would this have been when you first attended?
That was right at the end of 07, if not the beginning of 08.
Mm-hmm. How long has the Unitarian Universalist Church there been established?
Oh, I don't even know. Or at least Gaia Community's been around since 95 or 96.
Mm-hmm.
It's existed on both sides of the state line. It started out meeting at All Souls, and then moved over to Smooch, and then when Smooch decided to buy a new location and move further out, we went in as co-owners in the building back on the Missouri side that we are. But our congregation is made up of people from both sides of the state line.
Mm-hmm. What about your family? Are they pretty firmly Methodist still?
Brothers? My mom is still Methodist. My brother is just sort of a nondescript Christian, and I think my dad is borderline atheist. He won't actually outright self-identify as an atheist, but then he'll spout a bunch of philosophy and like, yeah, that sounds pretty atheist to me.
Mm.
And I married an atheist. So we kind of have this mutual understanding of I don't try to convert him to anything, and he doesn't tell me that he thinks I'm crazy.
Has he ever been to any of the services with you?
Every once in a while, yeah. Sometimes we'll have a forum or a class that's interesting to him, because we don't always do rituals. Sometimes we do like classes on sustainability. Like there was one Sunday we did a class on how to build your own rain barrel and that sort of thing. So we don't always stick to 100% religious content. And the way we do things is a bit odd in that we don't have a single pastor or leader that keeps things going. We have ritual teams, and if you're a member of the church and you want to be on ritual teams, then we offer a training class every spring to where people go through the training class and learn all the skills on how to conduct a ritual, and then they can join the ritual team. So it's constantly shifting what we're doing, because it's always different people doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so even celebrating the same holiday year after year, we're always doing something different, because we're pulling in from so many different traditions. I mean, the running joke is that if you get half a dozen of us into a room together, you have at least 13 different religions being represented. Because we're all just so eclectic, and we pick little bits of different things. Because I consider myself Kemetic in my private practice, but Unitarian Universalist in more of my public practice. So
could you talk about that a bit, the how you see yourself belonging to the two?
Well, part of it comes down to my personal philosophy, which sort of comes out of Kemetic religion. And Kemet is basically the ancient Egyptian name for their own land. In fact, it literally means the black land, referring to the fertile soil of the Nile. The ancient Egyptians were really relaxed about that sort of thing. They had this concept of Netjer being is basically the source of divinity, and all of the different gods were called the Netjeru, or the names of Netjer. So each piece was a part of the divine whole, but they were still individual deities. And then they also sort of treated their gods like Lego blocks, because they could take, oh, let's take this god and this god and stick them together for a while, and oh, okay, now we can take them apart again. And they didn't see any sort of cognitive dissonance in this. Like Hathor and Sekhmet, sometimes they're the same goddess and sometimes they're not. And both can be true at the same time, and that's fine. So what I've taken from that in my personal practice is that I kind of look at the concept of divinity as being the soul of the universe itself. And the universe itself is just really, really big and can't really talk to us because we're really teeny. So in the course of humanity developing, we've been trying to understand the universe, and the universe has been trying to understand us. And so it broke off smaller pieces of itself and looked at what we were imagining and molded it into those imaginings and said, here's some part of me that you can talk to, and then that part can talk back to me, and we can have some actual communication going on. So my actual philosophy is that all gods exist, but I follow the Kemetic gods because I get along with them well.
And so do you think that a lot of people outside of the pagan community come to the services out of curiosity? Or
Not often. We're still kind of the, ooh, it's the scary pagans sort of thing. So the neighborhood that we're in is aware of us and not really quite sure what to do with us, but I don't think they're quite as scared of us as they used to be.
Yeah, how do you see that playing out in everyday life, the misunderstandings?
Part of Gaia's
Do you think it's a general thing in the United States, or do you think the location within?
It depends on who you're talking to. And people who have educated themselves and know perfectly well what we're about and they're fine with us. It's the ones who don't want to look at how we view ourselves and just listen to what their pastors are saying and have absolutely no idea what we're actually doing. They're the ones who are scared just because they don't really know. But we've done a little bit of community outreach. We do a clothing swap once or twice a year that the entire neighborhood is invited to, and we're starting to get more people participating in that, which is really nice because we want to do more for the community. And we do harvesters collections all the time. And one of our biggest fundraisers of the year is also a massive food drive for harvesters. And we're just kind of trying to tiptoe our way through because it's a delicate situation. But part of our mission statement is that we should be visible and we should show that we're just ordinary people and we're part of the basic religious tapestry of the country.
About how many individuals are involved in the congregation there?
We kind of waver between 20 and 30 full active members with a few casuals drifting in and out. And attendance can vary wildly depending on the week and what we're doing. We had a very, very high turnout for Samhain this year, which was Halloween. I even got my husband to go to that one.
Yeah, how was that?
It was interesting because it was good. We had what this year we did a Dumb Supper, which was sort of a cakes and cider sort of thing that you share with your departed dead. And any of us who had someone who passed in the last year wrote the name in a book, and we put little tokens or pictures of those people up on the altar, and it's a matter of remembering those who have passed.
So what ceremonies or practice on a regular basis?
And that's the thing with us, is our rituals can vary wildly in what they do, but we have some basic structure. For the most part, most of the time, if you come to one of our rituals, there's a certain steps that happen. So we start with purification and grounding, and then we cast the circle, and then call the elements, and then we do the work of the day, which often involves some kind of raising of energy, and then we close everything down and take offering, and that's it. What happens during that and what the work of the day is can vary wildly depending on what we're doing and who's running things. Because, like I said earlier, even the same holiday year after year, we'll do different things. Like this year, we did a dumb supper for Samhain. One year, we did something based more on Day of the Dead. Another year, we did guided meditation spirit walk. So we do a lot of different things. And one of the things we like to tell people who have come first time is, like, don't expect this to be the way it is every time. And if you don't like it, come again, because we'll do something totally different. And if you do like it, come again anyway, because we're still going to do something totally different, but you might like it too. So because we have so many different people from different paths giving their input into this, we get a lot of variety in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's a good thing for some people, and for others who prefer to stick to a specific tradition and a specific way of doing things, it's a little uncomfortable for them. So you still have, you know, your standard Gardnerian Wiccans who want to do things in a specific way, and they don't really like the way we do things, and that's fine. So we're a lot more flexible and fluid than a lot of other congregations or pagan circles that you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
We're weird. As far as I know, we're one of only three UU congregations like us. The other two based themselves on us, and I'm not even sure if one of those exists anymore.
Oh, really? Short-lived?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened there, but most of the UU pagans have covenant groups instead of actually having their own congregation. So the Unitarian Universalist Association doesn't really know quite what to do with this, because we don't do things the way that they're used to people doing it. We don't have a pastor. So that's kind of a mark against us right there, because we're not employing a UU pastor, but A, we can't afford it, and B, but it's not really how we like to do things. We like keeping the variety in. We like pulling things from different paths. And then the pagans don't really know what to do with us, because we're too UU for them. And UU is just like, you mean you guys actually deal with deity on a personal basis?
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of the red-headed stepchild of both sides.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of draws attention from the outside and people?
I'm not really sure on how visible we are. I know we actually had someone from Kansas City Public Television come and do a piece on us when we were doing our Samhain ritual, and that was kind of cool. And that was the sort of thing that we like to see, is people actually coming in and asking us questions. And, we're also real active in the local Pagan Pride Day, which is in Merriam every year. We're always doing something there, because we just keep jumping in and volunteering. Mm. So we're getting a bit more visibility on the pagan end of things there.
Mm. What role would you say, you talked about the variety of backgrounds in your congregation, what role would you say diversity kind of plays in the community there?
It's really one of our most important aspects, because we do things so differently from any other pagan group. We pull in different gods for different things. We use different structures. Every once in a while, we'll do an ADF druidic ritual, and sometimes we'll try to do things, you know, the way the Egyptians might have done it. Sometimes we'll do things the way the Greeks might have done it, and sometimes it's making stuff up. It's like, this would be a cool idea. Let's do something totally different. So it's really a huge part of the character of who we are.
Mm. And most, I mean, from the sense that you get in the pagan community, I don't mean to cast like a, but do you think that most individuals you know come from a background, or sort of come to it in their own as you did?
Most of them come to it in their own. We're starting to see more who have been raised pagan, because, you know, people are raising kids.
Sure.
And, you know, it's definitely much different now than when it was when I first popped in. And there, one of the things that we do is we actually do have a kids space program. We have a religious education program, and we are deliberately welcoming families because there are a lot of groups out there that aren't as family friendly. So, but we kind of take it from the UU perspective of teaching the kids all the different religions and traditions out there, and just not as an indoctrination thing, but this is what's out there. This is what we're doing today, and this is, you know, this is what the grown-ups are doing downstairs, and you know, these are the gods we're dealing with today, and you know, we even include the Abrahamic religions in that because we think it's important that the kids be educated in everything. They should know all of the major religions that they're going to come into contact with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are there any other ways that you see it kind of evolving, either in the UU or in general?
It's really always going to be driven by who's involved. And the decisions that get made in our church are done by consensus, not just a majority vote, but generally everyone who is at the business meeting generally has to agree on a thing before we will go forward to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, we might get one person who's a little bit dissenty, but most of the time, they'll stand aside.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it works really well for us, probably partly because we are a small congregation, but it helps us make decisions that we know, for the most part, everyone is going to be okay with. And the general rule is, those who show up rule the world. If you want to have a say in a decision, you need to show up to the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got to stay active.
Every once in a while, we'll get these crazy little rounds of, oh, the secret cabal is doing things again. Yeah, the secret cabal is the people who showed up to the ritual for business this Saturday. So had you been there,
pretty
you
secretive.
Would have been part of it too.
Always those people. Let's see. Oh, you talked a little bit about some community outreach that
mm-hmm.
UU's been doing. What other kinds of activities?
We're limited in what we can do, just in resources. We do also other types of fundraisers that are a bit more global. Like everyone, usually at least once a year, we do something with Heifer International, whether we're buying somebody a goat or a sheep. Like one year, we actually had goats versus sheep.
Mm.
If you want the sheep to win, donate to the sheep. If you want the goats to win, donate to the goats. So it was kind of funny. And like I said, the clothing swap is starting to be more of a draw. Because, you know, people don't want to wear the same clothes anymore. Grow out of them. Shrink out of them. Your kids grow out of them. There's always a big demand for kids' clothes. So... And the food drives for harvesters. It's one of the things that we do every year we call God Auction. This is how we determine who our patron is, because we choose a different patron deity or power every year, and that sort of shapes the sort of social justice type works that we do that year. So we started off in the spring with a penny auction. And depending on the year, sometimes we've done four in the past, but lately we've just been doing three. The top three people who get the most coins in their jars in the penny auction go into the God auction. And then we pick someone to portray each deity or power.
Mm-hmm.
They get up there and they say why they would be the best patron for Gaia Community for the next year, and what they would do for the community, and what they would expect the community to do in their name, and all that. It's usually a heck of a lot of fun, especially when the deities start trash-talking each other.
Some things get really interesting.
Yeah, it's usually quite entertaining. And it's not necessarily always gods that wind up in there. We had the Flying Spaghetti Monster one year. We actually had one year James T. Kirk nominated as a power. And that was an interesting one. It was divisive at first, and I was actually the scribe for Kirk that year. I made myself an original series costume, and so I was the yeoman. But, you know, I pointed out that that Kirk is essentially the Hercules of our age. You know, he's the heroic figure, and, you know, you wouldn't have thought twice about nominating Hercules as one of those powers, so why not Kirk? And we didn't come in last.
How's that going for you?
But this year our patron is Dionysus.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of trying to loosen up and relax a little bit this year. I think we're going to try to do some sort of theater thing. We did it last year, and it was a huge amount of fun. It was basically participatory Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
where we were doing A Midsummer Night's Dream. But instead of having actors learning their parts, we had all the scripts printed out, and everyone who came in, their names were put into a hat, and their names got drawn and said, okay, you're playing this part, and you're playing this part for this scene or this act. And it was a whole lot of fun. Everyone was up there trying to do their part, and we had a few people who were the innuendo fairies running around with signs that said whenever something was innuendo, it was... And we got a few people who didn't normally come to our stuff to come and say, oh, well, this was fun. I like Shakespeare. Let's experience this. Mm. So... And I think we're going to try to do something like that this year.
Mm.
We've also already done a couple of storytelling circles. We haven't really gotten many people there outside of our usual group, but we get a couple of people, mostly who are associated with people, but who like to tell stories. We did one where we told tall tales, and another one closer to Halloween where we told spooky stories. So...
Are there any other kinds of projects or plans that are underway in the foreseeable future?
We always do something. We have a committee for social justice, so we're always trying to do something there. Whether it's raising money for Heifer International or trying to do something for LGBT rights or environmentalism or something like that. We've lately been doing documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one that's coming up soonest is about bees. We also, you know, done other things.
You're producing them yourselves?
We've been doing screenings of them. Okay. Yeah. So, and we did one about food, you know, where your food comes from and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Had you had any kind of involvement with any social justice organizations prior to coming involved?
No. Not really. I'm not on the social justice committee myself, but, you know, whenever they need someone to pop in, sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. So how would you say, through the years or since joining the Gaia community, your religious views have evolved or changed over time?
A lot of it's just solidified. Like I said, when I started the community, I was an eclectic Wiccan who was just sort of dealing with things in an abstract manner, and then... There was a ritual where they were calling in different gods, and they called in Bast, and suddenly I felt this phantom hand on my shoulder and a voice in my head say mine, and maybe I'm crazy, I don't know. But that was a clue of this is the direction maybe I need to go. So I've educated myself on the actual ancient Egyptian religion and gone, you know, this sounds like my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, how do you think that society as a whole can be better educated on, you know, what paganism is actually about and what the beliefs are, diverse as they are? But
a lot of it is just getting the information out there.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest hurdle that we have is there has been so many problems that... a lot of pagans stay in what we call the broom closet. They don't want their coworkers to know because they're scared. They don't want or clients or family even. Sometimes they're closeted out from their family, or they've come out as pagan and gotten estranged from their family because of it. So a lot of the problem is breaking down some of those barriers, and I'm one of the ones in our congregation who is actually in a position to be as out as possible. My coworkers know perfectly well that I'm not Christian, and maybe a few of them have a problem with it, but they haven't had the nerve to say anything to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm I'm very fortunate in that I work for a bank that has a very strong diversity program and that is actually very serious about making those protections very clear. They even have pagan holidays on the calendar. Two of them are misspelled, and one of them is questionably on the wrong date, but dang it, at least they have them. At least it's in the right
direction, yeah. Let's see. Are there any particular individuals that you've come across during your time in the Gaia community, or any anecdotes that you'd like to share? Anything that stands out in particular?
I'm trying to think of appropriate stories. We're very good at being inappropriate, especially when we're not on, but because a lot of the good stories that I have aren't necessarily in a religious context, because the people that I met at Gaia have become my circle of friends. So these are the people that I hang out with on a regular basis, that I play games with, that you know, we just go and do stuff. Part that's who we're going to see the movie with tonight is some of my friends from Gaia. So it's kind of hard to separate the two, especially when all the best stories are didn't actually happen at church. But we usually have to do with role-playing games, but we've had a few doozies.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
But, I mean, the God auction is always exciting, just because there's always something interesting going on. We had one year where we had crosstalk going on between Artemis and Thor.
How'd that turn out?
Hilarious. It's all done in good fun. There haven't actually been any genuine arguments go on in God auction. They're just like making fun of each other, which just sort of adds to the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's, no hurt feelings. Well, I think I've asked the majority of the questions I came in with. Do you have any final comments or anything you'd like to share?
I don't think so. I think that kind of covers everything. You've heard me blather quite a bit.
That's what we're interested in.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, you're very welcome.
Let's see if I can figure out how to shut this thing off.